Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Matthew Priebe. Thanks for being with us, Matthew.
Oh, thank you.
Matthew, can you start out by telling our listeners how you got interested in animal issues?
Well, I was always interested in animals from my whole life. I grew up loving nature and animals and that sort of thing. As a teenager in the late 80s, I was exposed to what was happening to animals in our society. I kind of had an eye-opening experience where I saw what was really happening behind the scenes, and that kind of changed the direction of my life. From that point forward, I was always looking to see how I could get that information out to the next person.
Right. Was that a live happening or a book or a movie? Or
it was actually, we were traveling through Washington, D.C., and on the National Mall there was a very strange artwork statue, which was basically exposing different ways that animals are abused in society. It was very shocking type of thing to somebody who had not really been exposed to that before, and I kind of picked up a lot of literature and whatnot by the group that was putting it up. And that was kind of the beginning. And then I read Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation, and kind of from that point forward took off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, those kind of images have a tendency to stick your brain for years and years on end. And, you know, they can be quite traumatizing, but at the same time, they do bring to the forefront that we treat animals like this every single day in our country and pay no little attention to it.
Exactly. And that's why when I started doing this myself, I made a point of not going overboard into, you know, the cruelties in terms of, you know, the graphicness of it, but at the same time not shying away from it, because you need to have that eye-opening moment in order to really go forward.
Yeah, and in terms of people changing their lifestyle when it comes to veganism and just what they wear and what entertainment they go see, really does take something that strikes at the fabric of your morals before you, you know, I think for many people, for it to really stick, you know, if it's just a quick passing, you know, you can kind of forget about it and let it go. But for many people, they see this one thing or see this one video or witness something in person. And from then on out, they're awoken.
Exactly. When I first started presenting this publicly, it was 1999, and I was doing live presentations from just basically me speaking about responsibility to care for animals from the Christian point of view.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, people were arguing with me and were, you know, this was, you know, trying to deny and whatnot what I would say in a meeting. And then about 10 years later, in late 2000s, I turned it into a PowerPoint presentation where it was all with pictures. Now, I said I didn't use the most graphic pictures possible, but at the same time, I did use images showcasing what was happening. From that point forward, in the last 10 years plus of presenting it in those type of formats, I don't get the arguments anymore. And I have people who listen to both versions who were almost indifferent after the first hearing, and when the second one thing, that's so much better, I'm convinced type of thing. So it does have a major impact on people's decision to actually see stuff.
Yeah, pictures and film work wonders. I'm from the generation of vegetarians and vegans that learned through print from books.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't as many of us back then reading books. And now with the movies and pictures, got a movement going.
Exactly.
And very easily you can stumble upon somebody's posting on a social media page, that quick highlight about something that you wouldn't have sought out on your own. But, you know, you get exposed to a new issue and learn something. So there is the benefit of that. So you've been presenting for more than 20 years. Have you seen a great change in sort of how Christian churches have been responding to your presentations?
Actually, yes. Like I said, I became involved in the movement in basically 1989. I had always been a vegetarian. I actually grew up vegetarian. My father was raised vegetarian, and so when my parents raised me, they raised me vegetarian as well. I grew up in a small college town north of San Francisco. My father was a professor of religion there. And so it was a very Christian environment in which I was familiar. And there was no awareness of these types of issues back then. There was no discussion of it. There was nothing in my community in which any of these issues were discussed. Once I became involved with this myself, I kind of went through a 10-year period of kind of absorbing information, just kind of learning everything I could. And then in 99, I started presenting. Now, since I've been presenting it, I've noticed huge steps forward in the Christian community in which I speak and interact and that sort of thing. there is a lot more awareness of these things. People who do magazines and presentations come to me now for my input and for articles and things like that, which I never did see back 30 years ago. Hmm. So, yes, there is a huge increase in these kind of awarenesses in the areas in which I deal.
What about some evolution in the thoughts about what the word dominion means? Have you seen a change in Christians' interpretation of that word? Because it is used, you know, in both sides of the argument about how we treat animals, whether they're mm-hmm. ours to dominate or if they're ours to take care of.
Exactly, yeah. The Christianity has, for 2,000 years, done a poor job of representing Christ. And it's I contend there's been very few true Christians through history, because a lot of the time it's just a name you slap onto whatever motivations you want to do to others whatever you want. So you know, for many years it's not really representative of what Christ really believes. So my focus has always been, what does the Bible actually say? What does Christ actually teach? And that has been the focus of my ministry, because my work is to go to the Bible and see what it actually says, and not go with what somebody said in the 4th century or the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And so my focus is to see what dominion really means, and that's what my book is about. And it basically showcases that dominion does not mean domination. It was not intended to be that, because in the original scripture, animals were defined as living souls exactly the same as human beings. And that is something that Christianity has completely missed, because we put it into a two-tier category where people are above animals and this sort of thing. And that's not how the Bible actually treats it. So when we look at it that way, the dominion is stewardship. It's responsibility for as a fellow creature, not as something to be enslaved. Bible-believing Christians, which I consider myself one of, who actually treat Scripture as important throughout. And when you do that, there is really no defense for cruelty to animals. There's absolutely nothing you can say. You have to go externally to say the Bible really teaches this when it doesn't. And so that has been something I think is extremely positive in the Christian community, is that there's a lot more awareness of what the Bible actually says instead of what somebody says it says.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, the first question for many people is, well, is it acceptable to eat meat? And some people may say, oh, yeah, you know, going back to what we talked about before, God has sort of blessed us and allowed us to do that. But then I think if you are forced to take the next step and look at how these animals are raised for food, or how they ended up as something that you wear, I think that's a whole different conversation. So in your presentations and outreach, do you talk about how food is actually raised?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I go through that very extensively. And, you know, when the term veganism was invented, in the 60s, 70s, it was designed not to be a dietary term. It was supposed to be a lifestyle term. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a thing where all aspects of a lifestyle were causing as little cruelty as possible. And we've kind of lost sight of that in our kind of modern definition of veganism being just a diet choice. But when you look at the original meaning of veganism, that's the lifestyle of Eden. That's the lifestyle of heaven. That's the lifestyle that is really the goal and the guiding star of what should be for a Christian, the way a person lives, where you're not intentionally causing cruelty to anybody by any of your actions, whether that's people or animals. And so, yeah, that is definitely a part of what I'm always trying to do, is say, you know, what we do is needing to represent Christ and God's government, because that's the way he set it up. Now, in the original Bible, it's actually interesting, because the original lifestyle was completely vegan in the Garden of Eden, and then it was maintained that way after the fall. So when you go actually for 2,000 years of history, God never allowed any meat eating to be eaten under any type of permission until after the flood. And so after the flood, there's not as much food available, and so he allowed meat eating to be done under very restrictive conditions, only certain animals, and never with the blood to be eaten in the animals, which I think is something that Christianity has completely missed, because there is no blood to be eaten in any diet that was allowed in the Bible. From the beginning to the end of the Bible, at no point was blood allowed to be eaten. And when you remove the blood, all of a sudden meat loses its appeal. It loses its flavor. It loses its taste. And it becomes something that you do for only survival, because it's not something fun. And that changes entirely the permission in the Bible to eat meat. It's no longer something that you're hungering after. It's something that you have to do because there's nothing else available.
You can't get rid of all the blood in an animal when you're processing it.
Well, it's not 100%, but it's in terms of the majority of it you can get rid of, and that does take the taste out with it, because it's the uric acid, which contains most of the flavor, and that's contained in the blood. And so it's basically, the original dietary restrictions were primitive, but at the same time effective enough to make it something that was not an enjoyable process, but a necessary one.
The other thing that's kind of interesting is how the definition of meat has changed over the course of how people interpret it. Like right now, I think we're in Lent or just ending Lent, and people aren't eating meat, but they'll eat fish.
Because you can eat a turtle and things like that, because it's a fish. It's a very hypocritical system.
And yet many of us still continue to see the world as us versus them, and we can sort of pick and choose how we manipulate our
conquering nature.
And then just the scale of destruction that's going on globally to support people eating meat, which is not necessary and also not kind and compassionate and Christ-like, as you said.
It's not sustainable. It's not compassionate. It's not Christian.
And we talk about this on occasion on ACK Radio, but the hidden sort of victims of sort of how we eat today too is those that are killed off by the ranching industry. And so people are like, we're sort of allowed to eat animals, but in the process the ranching industry is killing off condors and grizzlies and
wolves
and prairie dogs and
coyotes.
Exactly.
Another thing that isn't realized is the harm we're doing to other people by choosing a meat-based diet. We're in the middle of a virus crisis right now that was caused by people craving cheap meat.
That's right. When we look at the human suffering involved in the meat industry, it is just as great as the animal suffering, because there is starvation around the world, because we're taking all the food that we grow and feeding it to a cow so we can feed 10% of what it could be fed otherwise. So we're allowing human starvation by our meat diet. We're allowing the destruction of nature and rainforests so we can have cattle everywhere. We're allowing pollution to enter our water supply because of the meat industry that makes people sick. So it's like this is all connected. And when we have a pandemic now that was started by cruelty to animals, we see how the suffering of humans is directly related to the suffering of animals. There's not two different subjects. It's all one subject.
In reading through some of your work, one of the things that I liked, and I don't know if I've ever seen it before, was you sort of did a breakdown on the life of a battery hen and sort of how, they're crammed into these cages. Maybe I'll just go through it here. It says one egg is equal to 22 hours basically to make that egg. And so it's the average time between them. And then in that process, that's 22 hours of suffering. So if you have two eggs, that's 44 hours. And then, you go on from there. But I thought that was a neat way to look at it. It's like, just to have this, 2 minute breakfast, you're causing, this hen to suffer 44 hours just for those two eggs alone.
Or to paint the eggs and hide them under a bush. What a waste that is.
And again, that's why I think for me as a Christian, but for any religion, when you look at your actions, how does that represent the God you believe in? And your actions cannot be just selfish. I want this because I want it. You have to look farther than that and see how does this represent the creator that I serve. And there's no way that causing cruelty ever supports a loving, caring God.
Yeah. You know, Matthew, I'm curious your thoughts, too, on how, you know, the path forward now that you're seeing, you know, changes within the church is, or, you know, how hopeful you might be about, you know, when we'll start to see a turn and we sort of reach that tipping point where really all Christians and others see the value.
That is a very good question. Sometimes it feels I'm banging my head against a wall, so it's like, you know, that you get frustrated. Other times you get great, you know, success and breakthroughs, and so it's hard for, you know, me as someone out there in the trenches trying to educate people to really know the answer to that question. I do see a lot of progress. I also see a lot of entrenchment among certain people who are not as much Christian as they are political. And so it's like there's a lot of resistance by those who have vested interests in industry or something that they are addicted to, whether it is, you know, hunting or fishing or whatever that may be that they are, you know, determined that they're going to continue to do, and they will justify it in any way possible. I do see positive signs, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because when the things wrap up that need to wrap up, there will be no more suffering. But that doesn't mean we get off the hook by saying, well, we'll just wait for God to do it. That is the most frustrating part of Christianity, is that, okay, well, we can't do anything about the problems now, so we'll just wait for God to fix it all. Mm-hmm. No, we have to fix our problems now. We have to make a better choices now. And we let God take care of the rest. But that does not mean we get to just trash this world and get a new one free later.
But it's easy to give up hope. I sometimes find myself feeling pretty negative about, you know, trying to influence people to choose veganism. That, you know, it's too late is my thinking lately. We can't really save the world. It's, you know, it's destined to be destroyed by our own hand, if mm-hmm. nothing else, very shortly. Because we're just not taking any action at all on climate change, for example.
Yeah, exactly right. And that is very true. Our problems are much more than just environmental. I mean, we have problems of every description. And we have too many people, and that's just, you know, we cannot continue to support this kind of thing. So eventually there is a self-destruct button, whether we push it or whether God is able to come along and take care of it and fix the problems. You know, the point becomes, how can we best represent Christ and God in this life so that he can do the job he wants to do and we can go forward and get off and get to a better place? I'm a very pessimistic person overall, but at the same time, I have faith that God has a big picture plan that he can help us, but at the same time, that doesn't let us off the hook of doing our job.
And also, when we're more compassionate and kind to other animals and our human fellow beings, I think it does change your mindset quite a bit, and you view the world in a different way. And I think that helps with dealing with problems like that we're facing, because you have a perspective that, you know, that you're doing what you can to maintain ethical and humane treatment of people and other animals on our and plants, et cetera, that we share the planet with. So I think it does help with your spiritual being, you know, if you can come to grips that you're in alignment with your moral values.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
My personal faith happens to be Seventh-day Adventist, and I find it very interesting that one of the founders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church was a woman by the name of Ellen White, and she was at the forefront of compassion and caring for animals. Mm-hmm. She became a vegetarian in the 1860s because of health reasons, and she was promoting that as for health issues. And then in the 1890s, she actually changed to promote it for the cruelty to animal issues. And that became the focus of her ministry in the later part of her life. And by 1900, she was predicting that society in general, and Christians in particular, would eventually give up all animal foods, all dairy, all eggs, because of the cruelty and disease involved in that. And so she was a century ahead of her time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it is important to realize that there's a lot of truth out there that we can actually find in Christianity, that sometimes I've been kind of distressed because a lot of people who become very spiritual and very religious in caring for animals will kind of ignore Christianity and go to an Eastern religion, you know, kind of Hinduism or something, which, you know, has this don't kill any animal type of thing.
Right.
But what I've been kind of distressed about is that the only religion I have found, and I've studied this very carefully, the only religion that I have found that actually has the inherent worth of an animal for its own sake is true biblical Christianity.
Yeah. Matthew, could you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your work?
Sure. My website is asktheanimals.com, and that's with hyphens, ASKTHE-animals.com. And that is where I have my materials, my book. I have it in print form that you can order from there. We also have my book form on Amazon Kindle for an ebook, so that is also available as well. So that is the best source to get a hold of my material.
We've been talking with Matthew Priebe, author of Animals, Ethics, and Christianity. Thanks for being with us, Matthew.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for all your work.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
Appreciate it. And we're all in this together.
Yeah.